Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. You ready for another round of the next chapter with Charlie?
I'm ready.
Oh, that's good. I'm ready, too. And I'd like to start by welcoming all our faithful listeners and remind everyone that I am Charlie Hedges, and this is a place that we seek to uncover possibilities and processes that you might use in your next chapter. Life is full of change, and we'd like to help you implement and manage that change as it occurs. My guest today is an old friend, and I guess I could say I'm almost old in both ways, Steve Reha. What's up, brah?
Hey, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Do you realize that we have known each other nearly 40 years?
That's right.
I just did the math. I was 30 when we met. I'm 68 now.
Yeah.
And if you count the zeros, that really comes to 19 years, not 18.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, you're right up there in my top three of the people I've known the longest that have maintained friendships with, and for the most part, enjoyed every minute of it.
I love for the most part. Just a bit on Steve. He's founder and president of Steve Reha Plastering, Inc. And I want to start the show by just talking a bit about your company and how you started it at the time, because at that time, that was a major next chapter in your life. Was that not, as you going from employee to owner of a company?
Yeah, that would be a good way to put it. Just to go back a little bit further, when I first got into the plastering business, up until that time, I've been wandering the earth like Kane and Kung Fu, trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to do with myself. And my roommate's uncle was a plastering contractor. And I was virtually unemployed, and he said, hey, we can use the guy. Why don't you come out and work with us? I go, oh, okay. So I went out there, and oh, my God. After the first day, I went home, and I was laying on the floor. I couldn't get up. It was just that worn out, and I was working for $25 a day. This is back in 1976, I think, 70,
oh my
75.
Goodness. Yeah.
And it just mushroomed from there, and I got to like it because I got to be outdoors all the time, and the scenery changed every day, and it was good hard work. It made you feel good, and I just naturally progressed into learning the ropes. Did my first side job after about 3 months in the business, and so I said, you know what, I can do this. So I wouldn't say applied myself, but I learned what I could learn.
When you say I can do this, you mean I could run this?
I could do this for a living. I could make a living being a plasterer.
Oh, okay, I see.
And so time passes. I got into freelancing, going here and there in the state, lower Southern California. And in the 1980s, for a while there, I worked without a license. And back in those days, no one cared if you had a license, as long as your work was good, and they would hire you. Well, the state started cracking down on all that kind of stuff. And
you're still working for?
I'm still working for Wilson Plastering, but I was doing stuff, more and more things on my own.
Okay.
And Bert was encouraging me to go out on my own.
And that's the owner of Wilson.
He was the owner of Wilson Plastering. I also worked for his brother, Bob. And so it got to the point where I couldn't land the kind of jobs that I wanted because I wasn't licensed. And so at that time, the state declared an amnesty for all the unlicensed contractors working as licensed contractors.
An amnesty for unlicensed contractors working.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it's seen. But
okay,
the rub with that was it took you 6 months at least to get a test date to take the test.
Yes.
So Bert offered to qualify partner on a license for me, so I wouldn't have to go through that. And so I had my license in about a month
without taking a test.
Without taking the test, and I met all the criteria financially. I knew enough about contractor law that I could get by, and I just started going on from there. I picked up a couple clients and, did the usual smoke and mirrors routine to get in with a couple of these guys. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I made sure I found out and started landing customers in Laguna, Newport Beach.
Are you still working for Wilson?
I'm not working for Wilson anymore. After I got my license, I was out on my own.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about that. What made you decide to go on your own?
for the most part, I could be in charge, do what I wanted to do. I didn't. You know, Bert taught me a lot about what to do, but I learned a lot about not what to do as well. So
about what not to do?
What not to do, things you don't, it's not going to work to your advantage in the long run, put it that way.
What was something?
Mostly that, is, you know, pay and things like that.
Paying your laborers?
Paying the laborers, you know. The mentality, unfortunately, is a lot of these guys might be great plasterers, they might really know their trade, but they're not very good businessmen. And Bert, unfortunately, lean that way. And I said, you know what, if I go out on my own, the first thing I'm doing is paying my help.
Yeah.
And so I've always operated on that premise. You pay the bills, and if there's anything left, great, I get something.
So you decide you get some, so you start getting some side work, and you decide I'm going to do this. Now, do you have any help when you're doing that, or are you doing it by yourself?
A little of both. When I went out on my own, I had a couple of guys. A couple of guys that I met just out there freelancing around came to work for me and was able to keep them busy and just grew the business and just got better and better from there. I started doing homes in Laguna and Newport. And
now what year is that? When is that happening?
That's about the middle 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? So you had only been in the business, you hadn't even been in the business 10 years when you went out on your own.
Yeah, just about nine.
Yeah, that's quick.
I mean, there's really not that much to learn, but what there is to learn, you have to learn it well. It's a skill. It's not just, you know, get a bunch of big brawny guys in there and have them start slinging some men around. It's a craft. And I got into getting homes, and I got a reputation, and I kept getting introduced. Guys were referring me. My labor force got bigger, and by the 90s, I was going pretty strong. I had a lot of work, had a good reputation, which I still have to this day. And in the early 90s, of course, we had the Laguna fire.
Yes.
And we were kind of on a tip of a recession by that time, but that fire kind of woke up the county. And we got in there, and we'd go right down the street doing house after house after house. And that really put me on the map. I think I did more burnouts in Laguna than any other plastering contractor. And we just expanded into doing bigger projects and bigger projects, all custom residential, occasionally a small commercial project. But I like the residential much better.
So now you have several more employees than just a couple of guys.
Yeah, the most employees I've ever had was 20.
20 employees?
20.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and that was manageable because they were all pretty good, so there wasn't too much headache with you know, the kind of employee stuff you usually have to put up with, guys getting offended by somebody saying something, or, you know, just personality clashes.
Yeah, I could see, knowing you, I can see that every now and then you might be a little feisty with the guys.
I would have to remind them that this is about the company. If you guys want to continue working here, you can be frenemies after work. But while you're on my clock, we're working together.
Yeah.
And some guys got let go because of that.
Yeah. So tell me, when you left Wilson and you started taking these side jobs, you decided to go on your own, did you have any fears of starting a company on your own that, oh, I might not get business, and what am I going to do? Did anything like that come up?
If I'm being honest, I would say half the time I was probably scared spitless because you just don't know. I mean, you're a gambler. Every day you turn over that truck, you're running red ink. Are you going to turn that red ink into black ink today? You know, what's going to happen? What could go wrong? I didn't really dwell on that, but, you know, it was always a possibility because the bigger the job, the bigger the headache.
Yeah. Yeah, and the bigger the responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how did you deal with that fear?
Well, I started listening to what my contemporaries were telling me. You guys are really good. So I started to believe it. And my guys started to believe it. And, you know, I rewarded them financially, the guys that were really putting out and thought about the company first as opposed to themselves and things like that. You know, it all worked out really well. I was the only white guy in my company. At that time, and still that way today, but I sponsored a couple of my guys to get their green cards, and they're citizens today.
Oh, that's cool.
And they call me Papa now.
Papa.
They call me Papa. It's
because you're not out there. You're not out there. What do you call it? Pushing hot or?
I don't need to tell them that anymore. The guys that are still with me, I've had turnover in personnel. Salvador, he worked on your house in Hunt Club that one time. He's out on his own. He's got his own license now.
That's great.
And he became a citizen, and then had a couple guys quit the union to come back to work for me because they didn't like working for the union anymore. And they're watching out for me. I can't pick up anything. But they, no, Papa, leave that for me. I'll get it. Yeah, but no, Papa, I'll get it.
That's great. So there's a lot of people listening that may be planning or thinking about starting a business and moving from employment in a guaranteed wage to unemployment, which is the first step to starting a business. What advice would you have to give people who want to start a business?
I would say the number one thing is, if you've got an instinct for something to be right, is to follow it. Have a plan and stick to it. Make sure you're the one running the show. Don't give out too much responsibility to someone who may not be able to handle it, even though they mean well and could do that. I've known a couple of guys where they've got embezzled by their employees because they gave them too much power. Caused a lot of problems. But I think the main thing is stick to your plan. And if you have to change it, you have to be willing to adapt.
Oh, willing to adapt. That's great. That's great. I always like to tell people two things that are a little different. They're not quite so business-oriented. Say, if you want to go out on your own, there are two things that you have to live with. One is, don't be afraid when you are unsure where your money is coming from in 6 months. Because your kind of work and my kind of work as a consultant don't last more than 6 months, so I've got to get a new job in between there so I can keep the cash flow moving. And you just can't be afraid of not knowing where the money's coming from.
That's right.
And to sort of trust that you're going to market, somebody's going to come to you, something's going to happen where you're going to get some income. And the second thing I love to tell people is, when you get that first big check, I remember I got the first time I got a check, and it was for a lot of money, man. It was for $25,000, and I just, and I thought, holy cow.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. I mean, that's a real lot of money. And I just learned I couldn't spend that because I didn't know if I had another job afterward. So we kept living at our normal, we didn't go out and buy any new cars or go any big holidays or anything.
And a lot of people make that mistake. They think all that money is theirs, and they'll ignore paying the bills, paying their help, whatever it is. And like you say, go buy a new car or go buy two new cars and a boat.
Two new cars and a boat.
And then there's no money to run the business, and, then they're stuck.
So in that, how do you deal with it when business is slow? Because that happens to a lot of solopreneurs.
It happens more than you think. Since the recession, which supposedly was over in 2007, that lagged on until just maybe a year or two ago here in Orange County for us. I think what you got to do is you got to continue to try to find new clients, new general contractors to work for. Don't be above taking any little job where you can make a little bit of money. Something's better than nothing. Even though I've been guilty of saying, I won't even get out of bed for that. But it's kind of a wrong way to look at it. But I think that's the biggest thing. You just got to keep, Winston Churchill, when you're marching through hell, keep marching. And that's what I've tried to do over the years. And
so just keep it up.
Don't keep going. Hope. Yeah. Stick with your plan.
Yeah. So you are 63 right now, right?
I'm 66. But thank you.
You're 66?
I'm 66.
Oh, I thought you were. I'm confusing with Terry. I think Terry's 63. So how long do you plan to keep working as El Presidente at El Jefe?
My original career plan was to work till 70. And the recession pretty much made that a reality, even though I still love what I do. I like most of the people I work with. I love my guys, as long as I can find that satisfaction where everybody says, good job, Steve Ray, here's another one. Or my guys say, you know, when they get their Christmas bonus, you know, they're extremely appreciative. And all that things matter to me. I care about my guys. But, you know, I just love being around the business, really. And I can see myself continuing beyond 70.
Beyond 70, yeah, yeah. And that brings me to the topic that I wanted to discuss today. And I think before we get to that, we got to take a break. So we're going to take a brief break here.
Sounds good.
Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And my special guest today is Steve Reha, founder and president of Steve Reha Plastering. And we are talking about startup businesses, but we're changing subjects. We're moving a new direction, and we're going to talk about retirement. Steve was talking about working until he's 70, 75. And I know we've discussed retirement in the past on this show with other guests, but it's becoming more and more of an issue as baby boomers start hitting 65 and 70. And I think one thing we really have to keep in mind is that retirement is a new concept. It started in 1935 with FDR and Social Security. Before that, people just worked. They worked until you couldn't work again. You couldn't work anymore. And there was no such thing as stopping work. And retirement was planned, and at the time it was planned, the average life expectancy was 61, and now it's almost 80. So we're in a whole different situation than that. And what I'm coming across now, Steve, I've got a lot of friends nearing 60 or 65 that don't have the cash in the bank or investments to retire. What the hell are they going to do?
Well, I think originally Social Security was meant to be a supplement to whatever retirement funds you may have had, or, you know, if you're going to continue working to, you know, maybe you don't have to work quite as much. But yeah, that's a tough boat to be in. There's a lot of contractors that they're in that boat. That recession was really tough on guys. A lot of guys went through their savings, maxed out their credit cards, you know, so they're working until they can't work anymore.
Because they're in debt?
Because they're, you know, they're debt, you know, business debt mostly. But, you know, somebody's got to pay that off. And I think everybody's just got to decide, you know, can they make it on less money without having the usual income that they're used to? In my particular case, right now I've got enough work where I'm kind of semi-retired. I'm not too crazy busy. I'm just right. And I can see myself continuing in this mode until I just want to hang it up. Been talking to a couple of my guys about taking the thing over, and I don't know that they're gonna want to do that. But I've talked to them. What if I move to Colorado? What are you gonna do? Well, we're gonna go with you. So you know, it's a it's a tough spot to be in. But you know, that million and 2 million in savings, like we talked about earlier, is a tough nut to crack.
What did we talk about earlier? Because
we were talking about how much they foresee that you need to live in your current lifestyle. You need between a million and 2 million in the bank to
that's
be able
a lot
to
of
do
cash.
That. It's a lot of cash, and that's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, it's not feasible for probably almost everyone. So you know, I think people, you know, if you don't get for physical reasons or whatever, you can't continue in the thing you're doing. You may go get a job at Home Depot. Hardware store.
Right.
Then the True Value down by our house, they have a bunch of old retired guys in there. They're great.
I know.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are things to do where you're not putting that kind of stress on yourself. And, you know, if you do have some savings and you're collecting your Social Security and that little job there, you can make it.
Yeah. So you work longer. For us living here in Orange County, it could mean moving to a less expensive area.
Absolutely.
In the country.
Absolutely.
Because we're certainly, even though I'm top five, wouldn't you say, of of cost of living places to live
in
the country.
It's high here, for sure.
Yeah. I know I plan to work until, I'm doing some kind of work until I'm 75, I'm sure. Now, although most of my work is volunteer work, I do a little work where I get some money and can contribute to the family, but most of my work is volunteer. As a matter of fact, we had this guy on the show 6 months ago, Nick Jordan of Wells of Life, and the next thing I know is 6 months later, I'm vice president on his executive board and committed to digging wells in Uganda.
That's right.
That is, you know, I can't speak enough about it. We've spoken on the show quite a bit about that. But what, you know what has happened with that and a couple of other things I was doing is I'll tell you what occurred to me or what happened to me when I first retired at 65 is, do you know what hit me within the first year or so?
Boredom.
Bored and useless. You know, because I was used to contributing, used to doing things that help people, that were productive. And now I don't have any of that to do anymore. And I had to retire for medical reasons, but that was...
That can be an obstacle to enjoying your later years, too, that boredom. There's a void there that has to be filled by something, and unfortunately, filling it with boredom is not a good answer. So now you paint, you write, you're still prolifically writing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, your paintings, I like them.
Yeah.
You know, and so you've filled that void, plus you're into volunteering and doing other things to fill that void, which I think is pretty cool.
Thank you. You were talking to me about people that you've known that retired, and within a couple of years, they're not here anymore.
Yeah, they die. One guy used to work at Westside Building Materials. Stormy had been there for as long as I could remember, 40 years. And he retired, and he wanted to move to Kansas to be closer to his daughter and son-in-law who's in the military. And on his way, driving their moving van out there, he caught some kind of virus. A week later, he was dead. And there's a couple other people that I know that the same thing has happened really soon after retirement. They died. And I don't know the correlation between that because they were healthy when they retired. So I don't know if that's just the thing where you just
hit
don't
the
have
age.
Anything to live for. I don't know.
I don't know. That I think it's really important that we do have some purposeful thing to do that we feel we're contributing and that we're helping out. That's why I'm so involved in Walls of Life, and you're still involved in your plastering business because you're producing good work. And you're helping all these guys that are working for you. You're giving them jobs.
And that's another thing, too. You know, you want to keep them busy. If I quit and they don't want to take it over or they're incapable, then what are they going to do? You know, I feel a responsibility to keep them working, too.
How long have most of them been working for you?
Most of them, 25, 30 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Way back in the day.
No kidding. Yeah, I remember talking about them way back in the day. So, as we said to ask at the break, what do you plan to do with your company when you decide to retire?
Well, if the guys don't want to take it over, and there's certainly a couple of them who are capable, then I could either shut the door, I could try to sell the business, or just sell off all my assets, and, you know, that's it.
Just shut the door.
I'm not going to do anything ceremoniously. If they want to continue the business, I'm happy to help them do that.
Have them buy it from you?
Buy it from me, and I'll stay on in advisory capacity for, you know, a year, 2 years, whatever they think they need. So, you know, with the language barrier and things like that on some of the issues, that would be a good thing for me to do. And
right.
All my contractors that I work for, they all know my guys, and it's not like it's a big surprise. And a couple of contractors I've worked for said, well, if I don't do this, I die.
No kidding.
Yeah. Let's do this or die.
You know, I read that by 2025, baby boomers will make up between 15 and 20% of the population. Do you think that by 2025 or so, and Paul, you can even chime in on this, that by 2025, the government is going to have to come up with some kind of plan. You know, they bailed out the banks. Now are they going to bail out the baby boomers? What do you think?
I think it's possible. I don't know how they would do it. They can't manage Social Security, but, you know, they'd have to kind of go into uncharted territory, I think, to make that happen.
I'll tell you what I see. We do lots of shows on this subject throughout the week here. And one of the things that I think is happening before us right now where they're going to have to figure out is health care. You've got baby boomers who are going to be the first generation to regularly live into their 80s and 90s. Our generation will live longer than any generation in history. And yet, as we've talked about, we don't have any money to pay for this, particularly health care. During these last 10, 20 years, this bonus round, we're going to spend more money than we did the rest of our lives. So we haven't saved.
Is that right? I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. I think you spend I may be crazy. I may be off base on this. Like 90% of what your lifetime health expenses are in the last 10 years of your life. Just think about it. You're getting all the operations. You're getting health care. You're getting all this stuff. So you're going to spend a ton of money, and we haven't saved for it. Businesses have cut us loose and aren't paying for it. Somebody's got to pay for this. We can't just have massive bankruptcies everywhere because of health. So I think health in particular is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
That makes sense. Not everybody's in tip-top shape. I've already had 10 major surgeries myself. So
wow. You've had 10 major surgeries?
10 major surgeries.
Holy cow. I don't know if I've had. Oh, yeah, I did have one.
So what will those cost when you're 80?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, Medicare will pay for some of it, but not all of it.
Medicare pays for 80%, doesn't it?
I think it's 80%.
80%.
Yeah, right. So who picks up that other 20%?
Yeah, you have to buy supplemental insurance, which then costs money.
Right. And
it's not cheap.
And they're talking about maybe, again, reimposing lifetime caps and other sorts of crazy things. You know, that's the one that scares me the most, and I think it's the one that nobody's really paying attention to. So maybe that'll be, as we're going through this healthcare debate, that'll be the final determinant as to who pays for it. Either we pay for it, the government pays for it, or businesses pay for it. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it happening anytime soon because I just don't think we have the government in place to take care of that the right way.
And I think the other one is long-term health care. The number of us that are going to get, we had somebody in from the Alzheimer's Foundation a while ago, and they said by the time you're, again, I may be off on this, but something like by the time you're 80, 50% of the population will have some sort of, maybe even
some
mild
sort of
dementia. Yeah.
Wow.
And we're going to live into 90s, maybe 100. So high percentage of us are going to start having Parkinson's, dementia, you know, on and on and on, all of these chronic conditions here that pop up in really old age. And who's going to pay for all that? Who's going to take care of all these? Forget about even just pay for it. Where are we going to put all these people? Yeah. What are we going to do with them all? So I think those are the issues, health-related issues, that we haven't thought through enough. We're not ready to pay for it. Government says they don't want to pay for it. Businesses, we can't pay for it. And yet you get a lot of people who are going to live longer and spend more than they've ever thought.
Well, I just feel like a couple of cement blocks were put on my feet, and I was thrown out.
Don't want to depress you here, but right.
What do I talk? How do I bring that out of the depths?
I'll take Jimmy Hoffa for $400. Alex.
I like it.
Well, it will require that a lifestyle change. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
That it's going to require some lifestyle change, and it will require working longer than you thought.
I think that's clear for all of us.
Yeah. The idea of working until you're 65 is just not.
For most of us, that's not going to happen.
It's not
going to happen. So, do you have a plan, Steve, for your retirement? Have you thought about that?
Not too much because I'm still thinking a lot about working. If and when I do, you know, I'd like to travel, and of course, I play my guitar and love to hang out with my wife and daughter.
Play golf.
Can I make one other observation?
Sure.
I remember the time you had somebody in here who had just retired as a teacher. I forgot her name.
Yes, Diane.
And she'd been a teacher for, I don't know, 30 years, something, a long period of time. Very successful, bright, articulate woman. And you asked her that question, now what? And she said the same thing he did. I don't know. You know, play around, fool around, knock around. But nothing really thought out or serious. I think that's the baby boom generation we're in.
And then the malaise of what happens after that, you know, what I've called boredom and uselessness. I don't think people are prepared for that.
I don't think they are.
That is, what do I do with myself when I get up? Okay, I'm out of bed. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and there's volunteer work you can do. There's all kinds of things to explore that to do if you do have that problem with boredom and malaise and uselessness. But I think I'll have plenty of stuff to keep me busy.
Like what?
The stumps we just call them, travel. Travel more than anything I'd like to do with Pam and, you know, continue playing golf, playing my guitar. I love to read. I don't get too bored just sitting around at home. We're homebodies for the most part. But I could see myself doing a lot of volunteer work.
But would it all just be pickup stuff, or would you try and start, I mean, would you start a band and start playing at a local bar at 75?
No, my finger's a little too arthritic for that. I did do that at one point in time, but not anymore. I just play for my own enjoyment.
And Charlie talks about this all the time. In other words, will we just be passing time, or will we be rediscovering some new passion or lost ambition?
Yeah, and I think we need to always have our eyes open for a new passion or a new ambition. I just finished for the second time reading Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, which we may talk about next week on the show. Hmm. I'm thinking about
that. I don't know if I've even heard of that book.
Oh, he's was in a Nazi concentration camp.
Oh, wow.
And a survivor, and he wrote the book, I think, less than a year after he was released, and he wrote it in 9 days, and it's known as the 7th most influential book ever written.
Wow. Okay.
And he talked about, this is what he learned in the concentration camp, is that you must have hope for something. There must be something out there that you have hope for in your future, and that's what you're moving toward. And people feel like, I don't have hope for anything. He says, you've got to find that thing, and that thing is in you. Nobody can give it to you.
I completely agree.
So you're always experimenting. And then you just never know what comes along. I call them, in my religious talk, divine appointments.
Divine appointments. God made an appointment for you at 3 o'clock next Tuesday.
Well, you know, that was the deal with Nick Jordan. Look at how that happened.
Yeah.
You brought him on the show. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
You said you need to interview this guy, and I interviewed this guy.
And I thought there'd be some connection with what you were doing because of who you were, and I knew you were looking for some passion and purpose and some other thing to fit into, and it just seemed like it fit.
So here's my conductor of my life here.
Liberace,
there you go. Well, I don't know if I'm going to do that one, but I have to dress up if nothing else.
Yeah, and very cool clothes. So I think we've really brought up some great issues, and like every time we talk about this, there is no great conclusion. There is no, this is the plan. We're breaking new ground.
We're in the, as your guest kind of alluded to with the Alec Trebek question, we're in the bonus round. My father, when he was our age, my dad was born in 1920, passed away a few years ago. He never expected to live 80 was the, oh, wow, if he could make it to 2, that was a miracle. He thought he'd 65 or 70 or whatever. So he didn't have to have to. He was going to work till 65, and he figured he'd die in 4 or 5 years after. They didn't need a big plan after that. Suddenly you retire, maybe we're not going to retire at 65, maybe at 70 or 75, but you could still live for 25 years. What are you going to do for 25 years? How are you going to pay for it? What are you going to do with it? It's a bonus round.
He keeps putting these cement blocks on.
Where'd you get this?
Mr. Happy here. Now, on the other side, you could do lots of things with it. You could find new purpose. You could find new. There are people going to start businesses. I think there are people who are going to start new artistic careers or new, open a shop or do something. I don't know. I think you're going to see a whole wave of entrepreneurship where people, those that can work, and have the and have some means to it are going to find something to do other than play golf. The idea of just playing around for 25 years, I don't think is going to appeal to most baby boomers.
No, and actually, when I was 20, I was shocked that I lived to be 30.
Yeah.
And now that I've lived to be 66, my mantra is, I'm going to live forever. So far, so good.
I like it.
So far, so good. It's all about perspective. I mean,
you can't prove me otherwise. So far, so good. I've lived forever.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm going to use it.
It's, you know where I saw that was on a billboard at an elementary school by my house.
I love that. I live forever.
So far, so good. But, yeah, I mean, it is a challenge, like you say, because boredom can sneak in and just really take your life over.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It is absolutely terrible.
Yeah. I'm easily amused, though. I'm fortunate in that way.
I'm easily amused,
yes. I'm not too critical. You can amuse me pretty much doing anything you'd like. And, you know, I love being with my wife, and we just have a good old time. And there's always Jenny around to keep us laughing. And,
I'll tell you one positive one, since I gave you all these negative ones.
Thank you.
All right, I'm 62. I'm a little young. I'm the young guy in the room.
Yeah,
I'm
puppy.
And I have a grandson, a three-year-old grandson now. When I was when I was 3, 4, 5, my grandparents all died in their 60s. I hardly ever knew any of my grandparents. And I think back to most of my friends, that was pretty typical. If you knew your grandparents only for a couple of years, I don't know about you guys, but most people didn't know their grandparents because they died when they're 65 or 70. Now, here I'm at 62, I got a three-year-old grandson. Okay, let's say I make the odds, I live to be in my 80s or 90s. I might spend 20, 30 years with this kid. So I've discovered a new role in my life, and I have no role model. I can't look to my old grandfather and say, I want to be just like him. Or no, I don't want to be like I don't know anybody who had a grandfather, really. If they did, they were extremely old and nobody had much to do with them. So yeah. I think we're going to discover some new purpose or passion. Those of us who are fortunate enough to have grandchildren, I think that's a whole new world that we're exploring here.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
We are definitely entering everybody's entering a new chapter. Baby boomers at the retirement are entering a new chapter. And what we're saying...
A chapter nobody's ever entered before.
Yes,
so there's no guidepost. Yeah.
Uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And we have no idea what the country and what the labor force is going to look like in 2025.
That too.
I mean, we've got artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
We've got robot... Oh, that is artificial
robotics and all this stuff, yeah.
We have so many things that are going to take so many jobs.
Now get negative. Have you read the comments by both Stephen Hawking recently and by Elon Musk from Tesla, two totally different voices who both said...
And SpaceX.
Both of them expressed real reservations about artificial intelligence.
I heard that the other day.
That they might really be like the movies where the robots start to take over. The robots are so smart, we can't stop them. And if nothing else, the robots could wipe out most of the unskilled labor jobs that have fueled so many people. You can't come out of high school anymore and just get a job working in a supermarket. There'll be a stocking robot. You can't get a job in a bank. There'll be a teller robot. You can't get a job in a factory. A lot of these jobs will be automated. And what will those people do?
And doctors.
Doctors, yeah, all sorts of telemedicine.
A lot of surgery will be done.
Truck drivers. So we may have very soon automated trucks just going across the country. So there's all sorts of job categories that will get wiped out by robotics. They can't all be replaced. They can't all become repairmen. They can't all become.
So, Steve, I want to ask you here because I know you guys deal with, you deal with cement and plaster and that sort of thing. Did you bring cement for this guy?
So, just drop
so
him off.
Just
get rid of this guy.
You didn't see the truck around the corner?
Drops me. Then he drops me a little oxygen mask and says, "Oh, I'm going to bring you up." Gets me halfway up again and puts another
boom right
puts
back
another
down.
Piece of cement.
Let
on
me
it.
Ask you guys one other question. I was fascinated.
Sure.
We did a show for a long time on manufacturing. We had a company back east that did forging, and they used to do a show on manufacturing, and they used to have the. I forgot the exact title of it, but it's the group that puts on the manufacturing report every month of the Commerce Department. Forgot the exact title of this. And they had this guy come on. And he said, here we live. This was a couple of years ago, so this is prior to the Trump revolution here. But their point was, everybody says jobs are gone. we're having a jobless recovery, right? Jobs have not come back. And yet, there is a massive shortage of skilled labor in this country. Nobody wants to be a CAD operator. Nobody wants to be a machine operator. Nobody wants to be an HVAC, whatever they are, engineer stuff.
Repairman.
I know some other friends of mine that are contractors and do just, you know, like home remodels and stuff. They can't get young guys who want to come in and learn this skill. Are you seeing that? You're obviously in a skilled trade. It was a skill to learn how to do this. You sort of apprentice your way through. Have you got a bunch of other than your guys have been with you a long time? Are there other young guys coming in saying, teach me the trade, or is this something that's, I don't want to do that?
That's a very good point, and you have a very realistic view on how it is. The labor pool, pretty much in any construction
trade
is non-existent. And my guys like to joke around and say, well, everybody got deported. I mean, you can't, there's nobody around. But yeah, it's an issue for every phase of
high school kids aren't coming out saying, I want to be a plasterer. No, I want to be an electrician. No. I want to be a plumber.
No. You still got the guys that came here from other countries looking for a better life. Those are still the guys that are filling those jobs. And you can't even find some of them.
And so if we do cut off that, if we put a wall around this country, literally, and squeeze that off, if we stop immigration or slow it down to trickle, doesn't that massively affect all of those skilled trades because they're filling those jobs and our kids somehow it's beneath them or don't want to do it or they've all gone to college now and they all think they're going to be, I don't know, something other than a plasterer or something?
Yeah, that pretty much paints the story of the way it is. You know, a lot of these people that are here illegally working hard, know their jobs. They would just give them
a path.
Give them a path. Give them a green card. Let them start paying taxes. Let them start assimilating into our economy because, like you say,
we're going to need them.
We're going to need them. I remember years ago we used to get these high school football players come out during the summer. They just thought they were in great shape by 10 o'clock. Their tongues were hanging out, and they were ready to go home to mom. And, you know, you don't see that anymore. You just
now,
don't.
I wonder, do you think that, is it possible that that's Southern California, that's Orange County? Do you
no,
think
nationwide.
That's nationwide?
There's a huge, the average, I forgot exactly, but let's say the average electrician is in his 60s. The average CAD operator, computer-assisted drawing, average HVAC engineer, whatever, the people that have some skilled machine position, something, they came into. Most of them are in these trades are the average person's in their 60s, and there's nobody coming up to take their place.
That's
somehow
exactly
it isn't
right.
A sexy thing. It isn't a cool thing. I don't want my kids to grow up and be a plumber. I want my kids to grow up and be a doctor, lawyer, you know, something.
Well, it is job security for those guys.
And many of these jobs, these people are making 100,000 plus. You know, these are not poorly paid jobs. These are skilled labor positions. But they don't have we send all our kids to school and then they come out with an English degree and they all think something else is going to happen with it. I don't know what they think.
Or even a business degree.
Or even a business degree. Yeah.
That's concern for sure.
So I'm feeling like I want to end on a bright note, but I've got to break the cement off my
feet. Paul's really got you.
Paul's down the gown.
Yeah. Now I'm kind of regretting bringing Paul on.
The good news
brings up great points. You brought up great points.
The good news is that we are going to have longer life than we ever thought, and with that comes the opportunity to do all sorts of things that our previous generations never got to do.
See, I think that's what I like. Since we are in uncharted territory, mm-hmm. a new chapter of uncharted territory, we don't know what kind of jobs are going to be available.
Right.
We don't know how the government is going to respond with health care and any other kind of assistance.
Right. Long-term,
that could
long-term
be
care. Right.
Long-term care. We don't know what's going to be available to us. There's a lot of other things that could be available to us. But one thing that I'd like to close with, that I'd like to encourage people who are entering this retirement, is to think, to keep your eyes open for what you might potentially do after 65 or 70. That's something to keep you want to keep a purpose in life. You want to contribute. We are born in the U.S. and trained in the U.S. to contribute, to be productive. And you want to find something that you can be productive. And Steve, you found it in your company and dealing with your crew, that kind of keeps you going, keeps your engines flowing.
Exactly.
Engines flowing, engines running. Right, I don't know if engines flow.
Sometimes.
But that's it. Keep open and know that something is going to happen. We don't know what it is, but I truly believe something's going to happen. I don't think we're going to end up in a crisis. I think we're going to end up somehow opposite of that.
And one of the things you told me years ago, I don't remember where, but that we were driving around Laguna or something, and I pointed to a house I finished, and you go, that's what I like about what you do when it's something tangible I can look at and not say admire, but, hey, I accomplished something. I did something well. And you, at that time, you were writing a lot and teaching. I can't remember if you were still at pastoring or not. It was quite a while ago, but that always stuck with me, too. So when we finish a project, sure, I can find lots of things wrong with it that we could have done a little better, but it's not major. Because there's no such thing as a perfect building.
Yeah, and you can look at it and say, this is what we did.
Yeah, and you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
An accomplishment.
Well, that's it. That's going to be it for today. And our sort of open talk about starting a business and retiring. And the retiring, we will talk about it more in the future. It won't be in the near future, but it will be a subject that's going to be hitting more and more. Because, you know, something just occurred to me. It's not just for the retired people. This is for people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. To encourage you to save, to encourage you to do something. You don't want to be in this position that I find a lot of people in. And you don't have to save. It's not going to break you to save. You know, if you could put 5 to 10% of your salary away or your earnings away a year, you're going to be just fine. You'll be just fine come retirement time if you're 30 years old. You're going to be in great shape. So there is hope for the youth if they can be smarter than we were, which is difficult.
How can anybody be smarter
than us?
Who
is smarter than us? Come on.
And I'm going to end with that. Who is smarter than us? You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, my guest Steve Reha, and Paul Roberts. And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, Charlie.